Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. Guess what day it is? It's the first.
First. Hey, like that.
That means normally on when the first falls on a show day, that normally means we have five shows in a month.
Yeah. Is that going to happen?
But not this month.
What? Oh, yeah, because I'm not going to be here next week.
Right.
Yeah. It's by the way, Happy New Year to all of our Jewish listeners. It was a wonderful Rosh Hashanah. Apples dipped in honey and a nice dinner and some time at temple with friends and family. Wonderful, wonderful time. What'd you do? You didn't go to temple.
What day was New Year's? Yeah. Was it Sunday?
It's yesterday. Monday.
Yesterday. Yeah. It was Monday.
Yeah, we do things in twos, though. It's like a two-day.
I've been trying to clean my office because I lost a couple of items.
Oh. Well, you'll find them. It may take a while, but you'll find them. But there's a lot going on here.
How does this holiday work? Because
Orthodox? Orthodox
follows the rules.
Yeah, Orthodox.
You're not Orthodox.
No.
You're not an Orthodox Jew.
Right.
In least.
Right. I'm a Jew of convenience.
Well, there's that. As a Jew of convenience, would you call yourself Reformed?
I would say that probably I'm conservative, which is right in the middle.
Okay. Conservative Jews, and I think a lot of Orthodox Jews tend to be Republicans.
Oh,
okay. Am I wrong?
A lot of them do like Republicans because the Republican platform historically has been pro-Israel. That's as they see it. As a matter of fact, a lot of them think the Democrats are anti-Israel.
Probably because they are, but that's
a lot of people I know in New York were Democrats. A lot of the Jews in New York are Democrats. They seem to be Republicans.
Huh.
So I don't know if it's a state thing or whatever.
Maybe it's the weather.
It probably is. But I did go this year to a rather religious temple. I went to the Chabad Lubavitch. These are the guys that you see in New York and all with the top hats and the long tzitzits.
With the curls, the guys that are, they're in Israel. They're like the Hasidic.
Right, the Hasidic Jews. I went there because this particular temple, when I go to like the really less religious temples like Reform, there's like rules and you got to sit down and you got to do this and there's no talking. And when I go to these, you come when you want, you go when you want, you wear what you want, you talk to people next to you, you shake hands, you say hello, you hang out, you leave, you go. They drink scotch, the best scotch out there. Every time I go to an evening there, I leave there zonked. The rabbi calls me up and goes, Andrew, come here, have a drink. I said, what do you have? So don't worry, I'll give you a drink. Opens up a bottle of Johnny Blue and we start doing like shots of Johnny Blue. I'm not kidding. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's an extravagant scotch.
Yeah. So
I don't think personally, I've had it a number of times. I don't think it's the best bargain.
Oh, it's $200 a bottle and it's a blend. It's not a single malt.
Yeah, it's a blend. I consider it an overpriced scotch.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It is good. I'm not saying it's not tasty.
It's very good.
Even Johnny Walker Black can be good.
Black is fine. Red is okay.
Well, if yesterday was the day, because that's what we did. We had some Johnny Walker. We actually had last night, myself, my daughter, and her fiance were drinking after dinner. And we had Jane Walker Black Label for as a scotch. So we were drinking scotch too.
There you go. Well, there's a little saying in the world. You say you sell Rosh Hashanah and you buy Yom Kippur. That's a saying on the stock market, like the buy and sell a man go away.
Yeah.
There's another one. Sell Rosh Hashanah and buy Yom Kippur. And so far, working out pretty well.
Huh.
I don't know. There's some theory.
I like
this.
These rules.
Yeah, some weird thing. Let's talk about
it easier.
I know. Let's talk about what's going on in the markets and the thing. We got a new twist. We went from trade war. Now we're looking at maybe even a financial war.
What's the difference?
Well, trade war is where we are targeting trade and goods that are sent and bought and sold back and forth. Financial is where we're going to target their equity markets or their financial markets, different than their base economy. So what happened last week is that there was a weird announcement on Friday that, hey, we're looking into possibly cutting off funding to Chinese companies, and we may be looking at delisting the Chinese companies that are traded on the U.S. markets. We're going to get into that in a second. I got a lot on this area.
Wow.
We have impeachment concerns growing and markets possibly pricing in a Warren candidate. And I heard this on No Agenda. I think it was Sunday's No Agenda. You were talking about this whole idea that markets are thinking about, you know, what if, and companies are looking at, you know, what if a Warren, you know, Warren comes in, is that going to be bad? We had the end of the month, end of the quarter, stocks finished up. We have another quarter of up. We have a follow-up on the Spearman indicator. And what looked like today was some of this market love is kind of fake. This is going to be kind of our theme today. We have a fake whistleblower. We have fake meat, fake promises on trade, so much fake. And the fake.
And I would say the Warren anti-bank stuff is fake.
You think so?
Warren, my experience, has been following her for years. She's a big talker. She just doesn't do anything. Right. She's a do-nothing person.
Zuckerberg. And so this came out with saying she's going to be bad.
Yeah, they think that, but in fact, she's not going to be bad because she's not going to do anything.
So fake.
Yeah, fake.
It's all fake. And by the way, thank you for standing up for me. I heard Curry on the No Agenda show, which you can listen to every Thursday and Sunday at 12 p.m. Eastern. I heard you talking about the fake meat, and he was saying somehow he got the story wrong, that I was all in on this fake meat stuff.
Right. You hate it.
Yeah. So.
I'm not going to let him get away with that.
Yeah, exactly. So here's the market update. We have the higher PE stocks falling again. Value beating growth for the month. Chinese listed stocks slammed on new potential delistings. Manufacturing declines mightily. And we saw the markets start off today after this manufacturing report came out on a pretty downbeat tone. As a matter of fact, the Dow Jones finished off about 350 points today. And that was right on the heels of the manufacturing report. So we came in at 47.8 versus 50 on the expectations, which is the lowest level since 2009.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. So Trump was infuriated and blaming the pathetic Fed for this, which I don't really understand how the Fed could really do. I mean, this is, in my opinion, I can't see any way around this. This is all about the trade war. This has nothing to do with the Fed. This particular number has nothing to do with the Fed. This is manufacturing. What is the Fed going to do to enhance manufacturing? I just don't see it.
Well, was this tweets or reports? Was this a report from someone or is this a tweet?
It was a tweet.
Okay.
So here's the ISM manufacturing chart, and you can find this on the show notes for episode number 475 at dhunplugged.com after the show posts. So you can see we're kind of right in that contraction zone. But
yeah, and you know, it's just not as though this should be unexpected. I mean, this thing started falling pretty consistently since April.
Of 18?
It looks like to me.
April of 18? April, May. Right?
Yeah, April 2018, yeah.
Yeah, this has been coming down and it's been slowing down. And it's very much like we've seen around the world and the whole idea of the decoupling of, number one, the U.S. economy versus everywhere else in the world. And number two, the decoupling of the ISM manufacturing index to the ISM service index has been floated around. And everybody's scoffing and saying, you know, oh, we're in a manufacturing recession, which is true. And then you have to wonder, why is nobody caring about this? I know it's a smaller part of our economy, but it seems to me that even if it is 30% of our economy, it says something. It's a tell. I don't think it should be ignored, do you?
No, but what did it tell us when it collapsed? Didn't collapse, but it went even, it looks like a pretty similar pattern, not from a lower mark in December 2014. It headed south and then went into contraction on October 2015. What did that tell us?
I mean, it was not a recession, but it was a mini slowdown in the economy. We haven't had a recession since 2009.
Technically.
Right. We haven't seen an absolute technical two quarters of negative GDP back-to-back since 2009. So it wasn't, and we got close to it back in 12 and 13, but this just seems like it's a little bit more of a elongated, I guess the one from 14 to 15 was just as long, right? That was the same time period. It just seems to me that this is a little bit more apparent that the entire world is slowing down. And we did see back in some of those years a real significant sell-off in emerging markets in Europe, so which they have a lot more manufacturing.
And if the whole world's slowing down, of course, even though we're supposed to be somewhat decoupled, it's going to affect us. These things always do. I mean, they're worldwide phenomenons, generally speaking.
Right. And we've been working on globalization for the last 30 years.
Yeah. So we're so globalized already. You can't just stop being globalized overnight.
Nope. Can't do it.
In fact, you probably can never do it, but you can at least mitigate some of the issues that we've had with it, which is the trade imbalances.
Yeah. I don't know where this is going, but the China talks are back on October 10th. That was the date that we saw. This is like on, I want to say this is on last week on, let's say, Wednesday. The announcement was that China trade talks are back on. You know, once a day we get some kind of things are going well with China. And then, just like we've seen every other time when things are starting to get, you know, back to a date and a fixed date, we have something. Out of nowhere, we get either a tariff rate increase or a threat about something, or we're going to pull out. This time it was this whole idea that, hey, you know what? We're going to consider cutting off funding to China. We're going to do something. We're going to try to limit U.S. investment in China. And the way we may do it is delisting. Markets were pissed off about that too.
Yeah. Well,
so,
you know.
So here's what happened on Friday. So here's some names.
When more listings, not less.
Alibaba down 5%, Weibo down 4%, Huya down 10%, Momo down 7%. The list goes on. JD.com down 6%, VipShops down 4%, Tencent down 3%. So it seems to me, though, that this is this kind of play where I guess this is the art of the deal, which is when we're applying pressure. I'll tell you what this is. This is like a fight that I have with my wife. When I'm yelling and I'm kind of upset, she just curls up and is like, don't yell. You can fight fairly. Let's just fight fairly and all things will be fine. And I get the steam out and I calm down. And then I'm like, okay, honey, let's talk about this. And I really think there's a problem. And then what does she do? Starts screaming at her top of her lungs at me. This is kind of what's going on here. It's like, you know, we have, we got China's back against the wall. China's like, okay, you know what, guys, let's slow down. Let's get reasonable. And the U.S. said, okay, let's get reasonable. Okay, China says, we're going to have a date. We agree on a date. And then China, and then U.S. just slams them again, right at the back of the head. And I guess the other question I have of this, because I don't understand, is can the White House actually do this? Can the administration
no.
force a delisting of stocks that are on our exchanges that are from China?
No, how can they? I mean, where's the mechanism? I mean, they could if they could, they might, but I don't see the mechanism. Where's the mechanism?
There has to
be some way of doing it. You just can't talk a big game. You're starting to act like Elizabeth Warren.
I mean, is this possibly a security issue that could be enacted by presidential action because of this, you know, for the security of America?
Seems unlikely. And this isn't financing anything. These are just open stocks that are being traded amongst, you know, one guy and another. I buy the stock from you, you buy it from me. The company doesn't benefit. I mean, they do in so far as they have a market cap that they can loan against or borrow against them. You know, they can borrow against it. But for the most part, it's just, you know, you and me trade, you know, you can have mine, I can have yours, and we go back and forth. This doesn't mean anything. So where's the security issue?
I mean, one of the things is it does prevent possibly IPOs from coming onto our market in the future. So therefore would curtail some of the capital raises that can happen. And
that,
if
yeah, there's that.
And then
but that's different.
That's different. And then if we do shut these guys down, I guess, and their stocks plummet and there's not much trading going on, they lose opportunity to get to markets for
there's not
funding in the future.
These exchanges are not going to allow that. They need these stocks on their exchange. They don't want the Chinese exchanges, you know, taking business away from them. It's I mean, the whole idea of having Alibaba Group on any one of the American exchanges is so that brokers can make money, so the exchange can make money. You take these things out, it's costing jobs.
Yeah, that's true. Even though, yeah, it would definitely
no, it's just
it would hurt these stocks. I think no we way. Do we agree with that?
Yeah, you can hurt the stock, but you know, you can also just condemn the company, or I don't know. There's other ways of hurting the stock. I think this is nonsense.
I think the bigger problem is the retribution if, in fact, it happens. Do the Chinese stop buying anything and maybe treasuries or stop buying our stocks and putting money in here or maybe even stop looking at – maybe if this happens and we try our best to cut off financing for any of the stocks on their markets, do they come back and maybe either simply just not buy agriculture, not buy products from us, or – do they even go so far as possibly with any wealth funds that they have or any monies that are involved in pensions or anything like that, do they go and then take their money out of our positions? You know what I mean?
This is all nonsense.
The whole thing, it gets worse. Like, the next piece is it gets crazy. This is unbelievable. I think I sent this to you to read, right?
Yeah.
So this is how crazy it's getting, folks. Okay. This is where it's getting like Twilight Zone. I need some Twilight Zone music for this. But in No Agenda parlance, because I know a lot of people here listen to No Agenda, this would be a moment that we have to shift into the alternative universe, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there's definitely some other kinds of thinking going on here that okay. We don't do right. Normally.
Right. So there was an article that was trying to make the case that the MSCI World XUS Index. So we have the S&P 500 index and there's, you know, the NASDAQ index and all that. There's the Morgan Stanley Capital International World XUS Index, which is basically an index that tracks certain major markets around the world. And that particular index is used, I use that index actually, as a benchmark for performance. There are some mutual funds, there are some ETFs that will emulate those so you can invest in that. And recently, well, not too long ago, China's shares are in that index. There's a component of, I don't know the exact number, let's say it's 10% of the index is quote unquote China shares. So this article contends that people that are using this particular index, in particular, the Federal Retirement Thrift Savings Plan, as a benchmark, are essentially forcing money into China, benefiting the Chinese Communist Party. And the article quotes, the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, the body that manages the Thrift Savings Plan, which is basically the 401k for federal employees, wants to funnel the retirement savings of these Americans directly to a regime that poses one of the greatest threats to our nation's long-term security and prosperity, the Chinese Communist Party. And they said the board's short-sighted, foolish decision to use the MSCI All Country XUS Index as a benchmark. Remember something, benchmark is the key here. That's the key. They're not saying we're using this as a particular place we're investing, but as a benchmark, which, if that's the case, they're going to try to emulate that in their portfolio so they could stay on benchmark. That's what you do. But still, will effectively fund companies that engage in human rights abuses and support China's efforts to undermine America. It exposes nearly $50 billion in assets to severe and undisclosed material risks associated with many Chinese companies listed on the index. And they go on and on and on about this. And it's, you know, but the unscrupulous companies and fiduciary concerns. And I mean, this is crazy. What was fascinating about it was that if you get to the bottom of this, if you can kind of stand reading any further, if you get to the bottom, it was written by Marco Rubio and Jeannie Sheehan, a Republican and a Democrat.
Yes, Shaheen.
They're writing this as if they were, it's just unbelievable to me.
I don't know who wrote it for them. I doubt if either one of them has the concept or knowledge to write this piece. Is written for them by someone else. I don't know who even guided it. It's somewhat baffling. It doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about it. And I don't know what the point of it was.
It seems to me it's once again one of these Marco Rubio things that he gets himself around, you know, where he finds a cause and he go. But was me even more bizarre about this article? There was absolutely no contrapoints in here. There was not one. Was there one shred of any contra opinion in the entire article?
Well, it wasn't written as a news article. It was written as an opinion. And generally speaking, let me try to come up with something here to make sense. When you're writing an opinion piece, if you want to make your facts more pronounced, that's when you use the contra opinions so you could hammer them back. Or you bring counter opinions in when you're trying to make a point that you immediately know someone else will be the reader will be thinking something else, or it'll trigger a thought in them that they're going to start thinking, well, wait a minute, if that's true, then that's when you do the counterpoints, because you have to kind of buffalo the reader by going around, you know, doing an end run around the way they're going to perceive the piece. So I guess it was, I don't know who put this together. It just seemed crazy. It seemed nuts. Yeah.
It seemed totally nuts. I mean, in the timing of it, when, you know, now we have that announcement about possibly delisting and bad China, it kind of reminds me of the, what was it? I guess it was the 50s when the whole communism thing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, you know, everybody.
Red scare, red baiting, red scare.
Yeah. It's, you know,
Pinkos.
Yeah. China is the bad one. Anything China, you know, don't buy anything. And when we had the whole China toy scare, and that was all about just buy America. And yeah. I mean, this is the same thing that's going on and on. It's like they're the evil empire that we have to do business with, but yet we're trying to somehow, you know, I don't know. It seems to me there's a lot different
than Russia. With Russia, we never did business with them because they weren't really an economic powerhouse. They were mostly, you know, we never did business with them because of the stuff that was on the international market that they bought and sold, besides their, you know, just edibles, was armaments.
Right.
We'd build a jet, they'd build a jet, and we'd sell against their jet. But it wasn't like they were doing all the, you know, building all the widgets and things that we need to build our products. And so we had to do a deal. It was nothing like that. This is a very unusual situation with China.
I just find that the blowhardness of these, our elected officials has gone so off the deep end that it's impossible to even with a straight face, look at them like, what are you doing?
This is Trump.
How do you get that back to Trump?
I'll take it back to Trump, because the first thing you learn in college level political science is that the moral authority of the country is always the president of the United States. I would blame the rapid increase in the likelihood of teenage, let's say, blowjobs to Clinton, because he said it's not sex. And Trump is, you could thank Clinton or hate him. And
I'll thank him. I was young then.
Yes, it was probably a good thing. But Trump, with his braggadocio and his bluster and all this hyperbole, it set the tone. And everybody, even though they deny it, they're all part of it. I mean, Elizabeth Warren's worse than ever when it comes to this, thanks to Trump. So, yeah, I can blame Trump. I'm blaming Trump.
Okay. Well, we have what's called the race to the bottom. For a while, we've had the race to the bottom in rates, and we see that Japan and Europe and countries around the world are looking at negative rates, and the lower is better, and how upside down this world is. And now we have a race to the bottom, something that's been going on for a while now. And it's this whole low-cost investment environment. So We saw this happen with the move from mutual funds that charged, I don't know, some fee to, and everybody wants to be in ETFs, and they'd rather be in the ETFs, even if they don't perform well, because they're lower cost. And then we had...
Most of them, turns out they don't.
Right. Well, so, you know, we've done a lot of studies on this, and there are some areas that you want to be in ETFs, and there's some areas that you want to be in mutual funds. But just blanketly saying that ETFs are the best place to be does not make sense. And we saw that the advent of these online robo-advisors, and they charged a fee, and then all of a sudden we saw some of them going free because it was an asset grab, and they'd get money from other parts of the process, unbeknownst to the individual. But that was really great. Then we saw that a lowering of trading commissions, because we have things like the Robinhood app, which is, you know, this thing where you can press a button and buy shares, and it doesn't cost you anything. It does cost you. You're paying for flow, and you're probably not getting the execution you should.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues.
Yeah, we're all probably paying a lot for that kind of thing. Well, Interactive Brokers yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, came out with a, I think it was Friday, they came out with an announcement that they will have zero commissions on U.S. exchange-listed stocks and ETFs with no account minimums. The industry was like, oh, man, I guess we're going there. And the stocks for Schwab and TD Ameritrade and E-Trade and all these guys came down. Well, today, the big, and we, by the way, full disclosure, we use Interactive Brokers for our trading accounts for aggressive TDI managed growth strategy. Charles Schwab, which we also use for our global allocations and core portfolios. Schwab comes out with an announcement, and they're the big boy in this. They come out with an announcement today that they're eliminating commissions for stocks, ETFs, and options on U.S. and Canadian exchanges across all mobile and web trading channels. Now, I'm kind of interested in this because on Friday I called up Interactive Brokers. I'm like, hey, so you're eliminating your commissions, you know? Yeah. Is that good for our clients too, you know, on the institutional side? No. It's only for, it's a light platform. It's not the full-blown platform. It's a whole different thing. And what you're using is a full-blown platform. And of course, you're looking for lowest cost and best execution, stuff like that. So that's not a zero commission. I'm like, okay, fine.
Oh, brother.
It doesn't matter. It's cheap enough anyway. It's so cheap to work with Interactive Brokers. I mean, my clients get, I don't know, 50 cents or a dollar trading commission or something like that when we trade, because we block trade it. On Charles Schwab, it says all channels. Now, we're the institutional. I'm in the institutional division of Schwab with my block of business, not the retail. So I'm hoping that we'll get that because it is $4.95 a trade over there, and that will open up a whole interesting opportunity for us to work with them because they're a little bit higher in cost, and we can't do active trading because $5 active trading adds up over time. So if we could do the same thing we're doing and get that for zero cost, that'd be great. Now, the reaction, Schwab was down 8%, Interactive Brokers today down 9%, TD Ameritrade was down 23% today. And this, we use them also. That is not...
Why did they take such a beating?
I think because they haven't lowered their fees and they are the direct... I think they have a higher amount of their overall revenue mix is related to trading commissions. Schwab is like 8% or 7%. So I think
What else does Schwab do to get money?
The big thing that all these companies do is they make money on your money sitting in a cash account.
Oh.
You know?
Hmm.
So pretty interesting what's going on there, I think.
Well, we'll see how it shakes out.
Yep. Let's see here. All right, we got to follow up on the Spearman indicator. Remember last week we looked at this? And I said it looked like it was starting to kind of roll a little bit here. I was a little concerned about this. This was on last Tuesday. We saw a little bit of a bumpy week, a little bit of a move up, then a move down on Friday. And so you see Spearman indicator number one is what we looked at last week. And this, again, on the show notes for DH Unplugged 475.
What color is that?
The first one. It says, see the chart says Spearman indicator one?
I'm looking at it. I don't see an indication of a one or a two.
There's two different buttons to push. One Spearman indicator one, one Spearman indicator two.
Oh, Well, it's not. I don't have buttons on mine.
What are you talking about? It's on the show notes. Are you open?
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So Spearmint Indicator 1 is what we looked at last week, and it was down at about a -3, I believe it was, or right at 3. Okay, we'll call it the zero line. And I said it looked like it was going to start rolling a little bit here. Well, this is what it looked like today. -84. And you see the roll of the markets along with it.
Yeah. Huh.
So right
there you have it.
Now we're getting into that point. Look back.
So, hold on a second. So yes. The Spearmint Indicator, it looks like it took a downturn. When is this? September? When does it start to drop on this chart?
I would say mid-September. Right, a little bit past.
So, what happened in mid-September that was triggering this?
It was a change of momentum, and you can see the stock market on top there. It's a change of momentum related to the statistical calculation they use on momentum for the Spearmint Index. It's a whole interesting calculation, but basically, it looks at momentum and kind of directionality, if you will, like, you know, where is it going, and it kind of just it doesn't really lead. It kind of it's coincident. Of this, but what I have found is more importantly than the rolling part is when we get down to the bottoms, like really, this doesn't really show a real hard bottom, but like -95 or a +95, those are like overvalued and undervalued. But when you start seeing it rolling and it definitely gets past zero, you're seeing momentum pick up, and that usually means there's a pickup in the momentum in that direction. This is down, and the market will continue that way until we kind of bottom out.
So you think this 84.24 is bottomed out because it's got a little curve, little indicator at the bottom. There's kind of like, it looks like a golf club.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're getting close to the bottom. I would really, it's not a back up the truck bottom. Like when I see a -90 or 95, but you're definitely getting towards a momentum bottom. That doesn't mean you can't continue on for some time on a longer term downstroke. Right, like it picks up a little bit from here, but it's still not giving me a buy signal either. Again, when I see it, this it's only from July here, so we don't see this. If you saw this back in December of last year, it was like pinned down to -95, and that's the number you want to look for. So right now, we could still continue this trend for a while. You could see, for example, where it flat topped at the first week of September into about the third week of September, second week. And you can see the markets continued up for a while there. They continued peaked out. You can see this continuing up in that direction, whatever direction is once it's on the bottom of the top. But when it just dips all the way down is where it gets the overdone, cooked. Not there yet. That doesn't mean you can't have a daily move up or down, but it's not there yet from a big picture.
Okay. I'm unfamiliar with this particular.
Yeah, you should read up on it. It's interesting. I use it in coordination with McClellan. And I put those together to find out when they both will bottom at the same time. McClellan down at like -250 or more. And this at like -90. And that's when it starts sending alerts off in my head. Tesla. Last Thursday, Tesla, what do you think about this? Tesla rolled out a software update bringing a slate of new features to customers. And this is what it included. You got in-car karaoke. You got entertainment services like Netflix and Hulu. And a feature that lets customers summon their cars like they're calling a pet. No driver required. I guess you're like...
So if you have a smartphone, you can push the summon button and the car will pull out of a parking spot. And back up and then turn around and then triangulate where you are. And then it comes driving over there to pick you up. And then you jump in the car and you're on your way. Now, there's a bunch of videos apparently on YouTube that you have to search for them because Tesla does everything they can to get these videos off. There's one where a guy summons his car and the car drives off a cliff. So there's some funny videos using this feature.
Oh, that's great.
But what see the cliff. What are you going to do?
What's with this in-car karaoke? I mean, this is all prepping up for when there's driverless vehicles and you're going to somehow decide you're going to want to do a karaoke.
Yes, exactly.
Is that what it is?
I mean, it's all from that show, that late night show with the English guy. who does car karaoke, does specials on it. You know, he's kind of a singer. He's a cabaret guy from England. And so he came up with this idea. I find it to be tedious. I don't like it. But I guess it would be it's kind of a cool idea. You're driving around this long trip, and the driver doesn't have to pay any attention to driving, so that everyone can take part in singing along as they go off a cliff.
But, as you go off the cliff, right, as you're going off. I mean, was it James Corbin, I think? Corbin.
Yeah, Corbin.
He did one with Paul McCartney that I thought was excellent.
Yeah.
He went back to his old town, Paul McCartney got out, show you where Abbey Road was and why they wrote this song and why they wrote that song. I thought it was a really good piece. All right, moving along. For those that thought that it seemed that people in Congress were exempt from the insider trading rules, that was something that was going around for a while. It looks like
they're exempt from certain kinds of trading that you would think is insider trading, but they're not exempt from traditional insider trading. I mean, the kind of trading they're exempt from, but they file all these papers, even though they don't make them public and they don't put them on the internet. You can go find them. You have to go do it manually. If you're passing some legislation about, let's say you're passing legislation to shut down Ford.
Okay.
And you know that everyone's going to pass this legislation, and it's going to be taken to the floor on, you know, a week from now, and everybody's on board, and they're all going to shut down Ford. You can go trade on that.
You can buy options. You can buy put options, you're saying.
You can short the stock.
Ay, ay, ay. How is that? How is that fair? How is that even allowed?
Well, it is.
I mean, you would think that if somebody had that opportunity, they would just do it, and then just for the hell of it, do it.
There's some belief that this is going on constantly. I was told, because I had somebody go look at some of these files, there's a number of people that are all in on global warming, but they're very heavy investors in oil companies. It's scandalous. But traditional insider trading, where the CEO says, hey, we're coming out with unbelievable numbers tomorrow, and then you trade on that, that is still illegal to these guys, and it's illegal to everybody.
Let's take this full round, because we got to, as you said, everything relates back to Trump. Is it possible then, if there is some kind of legality or availability of trading on information, as you said, we're going to shut down Ford next month, and so therefore what I do is I buy a put option on it or a short it. Is it possible that Trump said, hey, short the Chinese stocks, let's let this one fly on Friday?
That would be legal.
Okay. And we're still all wrestling with the fact that he hasn't put money into a blind pool, which is a traditional, not a required.
I know. He's not going to do it either.
No.
There's no law that says he has to. He's a real estate guy.
Right.
His real interest is, you know, he's old. He's already rich. He's not really trying to make money as a president. I find it to be ludicrous. But in fact, that was the original idea, where you put a billionaire in there as president. And, you know, he's not going to be corrupt because he doesn't need to be. Although the other thinking would be the guy's greedy. So you can't win. But, yeah, I don't know the Chris Collins case, though, exactly specifically what happened.
Yeah, he's a U.S. congressman from New York, and he is pleading guilty on Tuesday, which was today, to a case charging him with taking part in an insider trading scheme involving an Australian biotech company. So shame on him. He's out. And by the way, one thing I didn't realize this, really, it didn't hit me until we saw the bombing or the missile bombing or whatever the hell happened in Saudi Arabia that we're blaming Iran, right?
Yeah.
I never really realized how chummy we are with them and how it seems that they're our ally. I thought we were kind of like...
with Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
Well, we had a base there for a while. No, we're very chummy. I don't know what the point of it is that after all is said and done, but
we're sending.
I think it's because they buy a lot of stuff from us.
Well, and
just a good customer.
It seems like we're giving them a little gift here. The Pentagon on Thursday announced that the U.S. will send a Patriot missile battery radars and roughly 200 support personnel to Saudi Arabia in the wake of the attacks. And we're going to be sending two Patriot missile artillery batteries and one terminally high altitude area defense, or THAAD, missile defense system. And the Pentagon spokesperson said, it's important to note that these steps are a demonstration of our commitment to the regional partners and the security and stability in the Middle East. So there was nothing in here about them paying for this.
Well, I think the operative word here is demonstration.
Demonstration.
Yeah, this is a demo. We're putting all this stuff over there with it in mind that in the future they're going to buy this stuff.
So this is a 10-day free trial.
In fact, I'm guessing that, well, I'm not guessing, and I wouldn't suggest this, but it's not beyond the realm of possibility that the bombs that hit the things were ours, you know, just to sell some more stuff.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say that, but it's a no agenda kind of possibility.
Well, I just, so it does seem like they're not paying us.
And no, it's what it seems. I think it's just look, we're going to put this stuff in. You're going to like it. You're going to like it.
Yeah, you're going to like it. And if you don't like it, you buy more.
We'll take it out. But if you if you do like it, we expect that you're going to buy it. It's like, you know, these trials.
And if we are going through your crazy cockamamie theory here, what would have to happen is once these are in, there'll be a quick little flyover that somehow these Patriot missiles will, in fact, neutralize.
Knock it out of the air.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the ideal way to sell the deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, crude oil is now trading under the price it was before the spike due to the drone attacks.
Yeah.
So somebody got their ass kicked on that short side.
Yeah, someone did.
So ugly.
Yeah.
I don't know how we feel about this, but starting Tuesday today, a controversial law in the state of Florida are allowing some teachers in Florida to carry guns inside the classroom. They will not release who it is. It's kind of like on a plane, you have the marshal. You have the marshals on the plane. What do they call them? Flight marshals? No. Security marshals? No.
With those friable
air
bullets.
Air marshals. But you don't know who it is. It could be anybody. Right, you don't know what plane they're on.
You can usually spot them if you know what you're doing.
But they're not supposed to know what plane they're on at any given time to maybe throw the would-be hijacker off. And this is the same kind of thing. You don't know who's going to have guns. I don't know if I'm glad I don't have kids in the school anymore. I don't know how I'd react to this. So here's some more fake news. Now we're talking about fake love. Fake love. The FTC sues owner of online dating service Match.com for using fake love interest ads to trick consumers into paying for a Match.com subscription. How great is this?
Well, this is, I'm surprised from my perspective, I'm very surprised that this hasn't happened before. I have seen over the years, it depends on what site you're on, but I'm in the Berkeley, the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and you go on some website and say, oh, a girl in Berkeley wants to see you, and there's a picture of a woman. It's a very specific picture, and there she is. She wants to meet me. And then I happen to be in New York City for something or other, and I go on the similar page, and I'm coming in from New York City. This girl in New York City wants to meet you. She's stalking.
She's stalking you.
And so I use a VPN a lot, so I'm – my VPN routing through usually Canada. And so now there's a woman in Vancouver, same picture. And this is a scam galore. And I am stunned that it took this long to do anything about it.
Yeah. The owner of, they own Tinder, OkCupid, Plenty of Fish, and other dating sites, alleging the company used the love interest advertisement to trick hundreds of thousands of consumers into purchasing paid subscriptions on Match.com. So they're going to be allegedly deceptive and unfair practices and promising guarantees, failing to provide customers who are unsuccessful disputing the charges, making it difficult for users to cancel their subscriptions. You got to love social media and all this crap. A bunch of just hoodwinking jerks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's scammers.
All right. Just to mention, let's see where we are. We'll have a new Close to the Pin coming up very soon, but we also have the very important and effervescent donation segment of the show. For those of you that are, in fact, listening, having a good time, maybe realizing that the girl of your dreams is not actually the girl of your dreams that they're pimping out to you. It's just a fake ad that who actually seems to love John more than anybody else.
She follows me all over the country.
All over the place. You can donate to the show. Just give a couple of shekels. It's that time of year. Go over to DH Unplugged. Click the donate button. It's very easy. It's very satisfying. And I will guarantee that you will not get any love from us in the form of any kind of dating or anything other for that. So just kind of disclaiming the fact that we are not selling any love interests here. All right. I want to spend a little time here. I think we need to talk about this WeWork situation.
Oh, the WeWork thing. Yeah, you're on top of that. This is your new
this is
crux.
Something. This is something. So WeWork, first of all, did pull their IPO. We know that SoftBank wants to and did, in fact, successfully remove the founder. The new CEOs are selling off a bunch of like weird sites. They sold a Gulfstream for like plane for $650 million. And now there's some concern that the company who has all these fixed expenditures because of the lease deals they signed, and they have these variable deals with small businesses and on short-term leases that could possibly move in and out. There's concern they only have about money enough to fund their deal because they have a $700 million cash burn per quarter through mid-2020.
Wow.
And if, in fact, they don't get an infusion from SoftBank, let's say, or obviously they were hoping for the IPO to then...
No, the IPO would have made it.
The IPO also had there was a debt offering that was contingent, I believe, on the IPO. So there was like $6 billion they need to come in, because if they're burning $700 million per quarter at least, no wonder why the first day that the new CEOs step in, they start like just selling stuff and getting rid of all sorts of things and laying off like a third of the company. So one of the things that's really interesting to think about here is what really happened here? To me, it looks like a securitized real estate deal that was wrapped up in a commercial wrapper and funded by either loans, private equity, and private investors with cheap money. In other words, a massive real estate scam or massive real estate kind of deal that was very similar to a lot of the stuff that was happening with real estate back in the day. In the 2006, 2005, where, yeah.
Securitized real estate mortgages.
Right. And creating a major market for real estate that was really never there. Right?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I went to San Francisco today to pick up some stuff. And I went and I'm looking, and there's this new buildings going up. There's two or three of these massive new office buildings going up. And I'm just thinking to myself, what is wrong with it? What's the thinking here? This is not a good time to be building. You're supposed to build during a really nasty downturn, technically, if you can do it. But it's just like, I thought of WeWork at the time. And these guys, everything looks so rosy. It's just bothersome.
The other part of the equation is very similar to this, where WeWork created artificial demand, in my opinion, for office space on the commercial side. I do also believe there is a little bug in the background with the Airbnbs and the vacationrentals.com and all the various vacation style sites that have made it very easy for individuals to say, you know what, I'm going to buy a second home. And I'm not going to really worry about this because, I can get renters whenever I need them. And it makes a lot of sense to do so. And I think
renters on demand.
Right. And I think what happened here is that we have another real estate situation bubbling up here on cheap money with demand that was created over the top and prices that were artificially inflated because of all this excess money and even investors coming in, not only private investors, but kind of bigger companies saying, we'll buy that building and you know what? We'll rent it out and we'll utilize these Airbnb platforms, et cetera. And it seems to me that WeWork, I've always said, is one recession away from bankruptcy. They may even be closer than that, it seems.
They may be one pre-recession away from bankruptcy.
And I do believe that we have a problem also that will be bubbling up in the residential. But the biggest, the areas that have the biggest exposure to WeWork is in New York and London, San Francisco. And they're starting to prepare for a big drop in demand from the company because this company was buying up all the space where vacancies were on the rise. So they
that would be New York.
They're the largest private sector tenant in both Manhattan, which company has 7.2 million square feet of space. In London, the company has leased about 3.7 million of
space. And that's high money there. That's expensive stuff. New York's bad, but not like London.
Right. So their bonds are now trading at $84, 84 and a half on the dollar, 84 cents on the dollar. So it's about a 16% discount. But I think there's really something going on. Now, Airbnb is also going to be coming out with an IPO, and they decided, obviously, the IPO market is not very conducive for anything right now. So what they're doing is they're going to do with a direct listing to get around the, you know, the whole normal IPO process, seeing you know, hopefully doing something. I have some ideas that I'm going to put on our stock picks this week related to this WeWork.
Oh, okay. Well, this will be interesting.
Mm-hmm. A few other things. Peloton, IPO, speaking about IPO, IPO'd at 29, is now about 22.50. And this is on the heels of we knew this going into this, that there was the potential for more lawsuits to be imposed due to the fact that they used illegal music throughout their various cycling, shows and programs. The request to double the damages from $150 to $300 was approved by a court. And now they're going to have a $300 million. They may settle for less, but they're going to have to pay. And they're going to have to pay forward, though, on anything in the future. So that's going to be a big issue. They came out amazing how they pushed this thing out. It just tells you a lot about the lack of respect for the individual investor who they throw this crap on.
So, yes, well, you think that's not new.
No, not new, but it was really a smoke job here on this one. I mean, they just threw it out there like, it doesn't matter. We have this big lawsuit. Just, you got to take this. A great thing. Look at this great bicycle that sells for $2,045 a month. And we jacked up the price on it, but it's going to be good. It's an IPO. I've always said that if it's an IPO that I could put my money into, I don't want it. Because usually those are not good. Two quick things. Zantac being taken off the shelves by Walgreens CVS. There's some cancer producing something or other in their product.
Yeah, some chemical in there apparently.
And Amazon is going to be bringing cashierless technology that runs their Go stores to other retailers like airport shops, which I'm all in favor of, because in the airports they only use one hand in any of the airport booths. Whether you're buying a beer or you're paying for some gum, whatever it is, the cashiers do not use both hands ever. I think it's a requirement or something to go slow. Because we're in an airport. Who has to catch a plane in an airport? Who has to move quickly in an airport? And this effort is going to make Amazon grow its retail presence so the company can lower its reliance on online shopping. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I like to see how
I don't know. You know, we have an Amazon store in Berkeley. You know, the one you can go into and buy crazy stuff. I go in there. It's one of the more entertaining stores you can ever go to. It's much like the old Sharper Image stores.
Oh, God.
And Brookstone.
Right.
They were very fun stores to go into, but you never bought anything.
Never.
Amazon store, exactly the same. It's like highly entertaining, good way to kill some time. You go, wow, this is neat. And maybe if you were buying a gift, it would be a good store to go to. But it's a loser. I mean, it's compared to their smarter store, even though they have numbers issues because it's a retail, the grocery store, which is the Whole Foods is, I use them a lot.
Yeah, they're good. But the thing is that you talk about Brookstone, you talk about Sharper Image, I think both, which are bankrupt now.
Yes.
But they did have good stuff. I mean, they always had these weird pillows. You know, they had the $4,000 chair that you sat in when you're walking through the malls. They had some interesting things that were good gifts here and there. Oh, that's so cool. You know, different kinds of lava lamps and that was the old Spencer that had that stuff too. Remember that store, Spencer's?
Yeah.
Yeah, another one out of business. Out of business. All right, here we go. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind.
Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discussed in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures. Now, I got to tell you something. I'm going to do this because you, John C. Dvorak, deserve a round of applause. I got some emails on some of your picks today that says you were a wizard and a genius. Yep, that's what they said. Because you have two on here, one that was pulled out. And might I say that if you had your stop a little bit higher, you'd have been up. If you didn't have a stop, you'd be up 75%. Stock rocketed. But we're seeing some in a relatively benign tape, seeing some pretty good returns here. So Netflix is that right? It's up 26% on the short I got.
Yeah,
so,
that's your short. That's you. You're topping my old short, which was years ago.
That was a good one.
This is probably going to beat it.
So what's interesting about this list, though, is so this list, you know, like I said, it's over on dhunplugged.com. What's interesting is that we have both shorts and longs that are doing pretty well here.
Both shorts, there's two shorts on here, and they're both doing very well. One's up 13%, and then you have your Netflix is up almost 30%.
Yep, your Aerojet Rocketdyne just keeps just won't go down.
My favorite.
Yeah, up 49%. Kinder Morgan up 6%.
And a nice narrow range so it doesn't get kicked off.
It's unbelievable. Dish Network's up 5%. Planet Fitness, the short, up 13%. Symantec down a little bit. Wyndham up 4.5%. Red Rock Resorts got kicked off, but up 2%. Zoom Video got kicked off, down 3%. At Home, which I find amazing the stock did so well, up 13%. Kraft Heinz, not going anywhere, down 3%. Advanced Drainage is getting flushed, down 3%. Contango. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Contango Oil and Gas is. So this is the one that is up 42%. It got kicked off because you saw a reversal. I believe it was yesterday. There was a reversal. And if there wasn't that, it's trading at like $3 right now.
Yeah, so it's way up. It's almost doubled.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, you know, that stop was up 7% today. That reversal, it went up. I think it got kicked off by like, I think it was like 6 cents.
Oh.
Because of the 20% stop. But that was up 42% on the deal. And that was what? That was 9/18. We're talking about 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. That's a good return in 2 weeks.
What's really fascinating is that oil and gas have come down in that two-week period.
I have no idea, but there's somebody who was the right person was buying a bunch of it. Something's up.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised it took off so quickly. Most of these insider deals, like the Advanced Drainage Systems and even Kraft Heinz, are the insider buyers, but they usually take a while to catch because it looks like insider trading. If you buy it one day and then the next day it's up, it's doubled.
Mm-hmm.
So it usually takes a little longer than this. It's more like, you know, the classic is probably, I'm looking on the list here if you have any. Yeah, well, I guess Kinder Morgan, which is a big insider trading. It's only up 6%, but it's been taking forever to get that high.
Yep. So I did some research on who owns the most real estate related to WeWork. And a lot of the groups are private. We have the Monier Group owns 443,000, I guess it's square feet. But there's two companies on this list, actually three, but two companies on this list. There's the CIM Group. CIGI and SL Green Corp, owning about 250,000 square feet, which is not a lot, but that could be a little painful. New York office owners with the most space rented to WeWork. Square feet, yeah. 240, so that's like one big building.
Well, now what you're talking about here, I should mention to people out there who probably don't realize that's the recording we play at the beginning of this segment. It sounds so natural. Is that this is what most amateur investors can't do, which is look for the ancillary buy that's so obvious when it's pointed out to you, but it's not something normal people can ever dream up. You have to kind of be in the business to do it.
Yeah, so there's is this Colliers? Let me just look at this here. Yeah, Colliers. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Colliers International, CIGI, and SLG, SL Green Corp. They own about 250,000 square feet of WeWork and of space that is related to WeWork. The other ones are a little bit bigger, but these are New York owners. There's also CBRE that does a lot of work with WeWork in the leasing space with in London. These were down about 3% today each. I'm going to go short on these just for the heck of it. And I'm calling my thesis We Fall. Or I could call it We Fail.
Okay. What do you think? I think it's great. I have nothing this week.
Okay, nothing. All right. Well, we're going to end just on time then, it seems. Just a quick reminder for those of you that haven't either gone to sleep at this point or thrown your device in the canal because you're so bored. Next week, we will not be here because Andrew will be observing Yom Kippur, which is the holiday where it's essentially, so Lent. Lent, you give up something for how long? Is it 40 days or something? How long is that? 6 months? What's Lent?
It's for a 2.5 years.
No, really. What's Lent? How long is Lent for?
I don't know. I don't know. I used to know. I don't know anymore.
Let's just take a guess that we'll say it's 3 months for Lent, okay?
It's not that long, all I right. don't think.
A month?
I could be wrong. I don't know.
Well, the Jews won't have any of that. We're like, you know what? We're not going to eat for a day. We'll be fine. We're going to cast our sins away, what we go do and do
so something. So you eat nothing for the whole day?
Right. You're not supposed to, right.
And you can't do the show.
You don't drink. Well, it's going to be the night of.
You can't drink?
You can't drink. You can't brush. You're supposed to not supposed to do anything. You can't brush teeth. You can't go to the car. Lent is 6 weeks. Chat room, Lent is 6 weeks. We do a one-day thing. We take bread and we say bread is our sins and we throw it in the pond and the ducks eat it. These poor ducks get all our sins. That's called tashlich. It's a ceremonial thing. I don't do all this stuff. I go to temple. I don't eat. It's one day from sundown the first night until sundown the next night. Now, to be honest with you.
You watch television.
You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to go to temple. You're supposed to pray for your sins. You're supposed to repent.
Okay.
But like I said, I do what's convenient. So I'll drive to temple in the morning.
You have to drive?
I'll drive to temple. I will brush my teeth because I the thought of not.
Don't you think driving is also part of you should course. Give that up to?
Of course. Anything that
you should
requires.
Walk to temple.
Listen, I've had a lot of arguments with the rabbis about this whole issue about, you know, you're not supposed to use hot water. Do you know why? Because if you use hot water, it drains the hot water tank and then it makes it turn on to heat up again, right? So now you just made a mechanic. You're not supposed to open the refrigerator because the light goes on. You can't cook. I said, Rabbi, listen, you live in Florida. He says, yes. I said, you go to temple on Saturday. He says, yes. I said, how'd you get there? He walks. I said, you walk. Okay, all good. Do you open the door to go out of your house? He says, absolutely. I said, when you open the door to your house in Florida, does the hot air come into the house? He says, yes. I said, when the hot air comes in the house, doesn't it raise the temperature, therefore turning on the air conditioning in your house? He says, it's not the same thing. I said, how is it not the same thing? How? I don't understand.
Seems like the same thing to me.
It's the same thing too. Anyway, we'll find out more next week. One day of me repenting. I have plenty of sins to deal with. So anyway, I will see you again next week.
Okay, the week after.
Yes.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.